Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, this is Maury Moreland Morrison here to tell you GEICO has more than just great savings. Much more. GEICO's been around for more than 75 years, back when they were using Morse code. Sorry, that's just my sense of humor. What's more, with GEICO, you get 24/7 access to licensed agents on the app, online, or over the phone, so you can talk to them at night or in the morning. So forevermore, just know that no other auto insurer has more than GEICO. More power to you. GEICO. Expect great savings and a whole lot more.
Blog Talk Radio.
Alternative facts.
The following message is transmitted at the request of the United States government. At 12:07 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, numerous unidentified objects of unknown intent and unknown origin were detected at high altitudes over multiple locations of Earth's outer space by the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, and these objects are presumed to be some form of controlled aircraft. It is not known if more of these aircraft will arrive, or if they will attempt entering Earth's atmosphere. United States citizens are encouraged to monitor local media outlets, as more updates will follow as information becomes available. The following message is transmitted at the request of the United States government. Attacks by the undead have been reported in several states across the country. The dead are rising from their graves and are attacking the human race. At this time, it is expected that more attacks of this nature will occur in several other states in the next few hours. The intent behind the attack is unknown at this time. He has been observed that a bike for exchange of fluids is a method of transmission. This is an extremely dangerous situation if they crave the taste of human flesh. It is not known whether this event will last for hours, days, or even longer. Stay calm, as authorities have been dispatched to deal with these creatures. An all-clear siren will be sounded when this situation is under control.
Welcome to Within the Chaos with your host,
Rodney Shortridge,
and co-host,
Robin Dalton.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. You can listen in by going to blogtalkradio.com/withinthechaos or listen in by phone. You can dial 323 870-4197. And you can also call in to ask questions to our guests at the same number, 323-870-4197. From deep within the heart of the Appalachians, I'd like to welcome everyone and thank you all for listening to Within the Chaos. My name is Rodney Shortridge, and I'll be your host tonight, along with my fiery redhead co-host, Robin Dalton.
Hey, y'all.
Tonight, our special guest is Dakota Shortridge. Dakota is my daughter and is the author of On Pain Through Love, a collection of writings about abuse and attempting to overcome it. Dakota is a cat lady at heart with three furry babies. I love trash reality TV and a passion for her job as an advocate for survivors of domestic and sexual violence. I'd like to give a big old country shout out to my cousins up in Ohio, Jennifer and Joe Shortridge of 222 Paranormal. You ever get a chance, check them out. Check out their talk show. You can find them on Facebook under 222 Paranormal. And also, I'd like to remind everybody, next weekend, Friday, March 17th, we're going to be down at Robbinsville, North Carolina, where we're going to meet up with a few cast members of Moonshiners, Lance Waltrip, and they invited us down to do a they're going to have a meet and greet, and we're going to actually record a show to air at a later date, and hopefully have some fun with my boys. So, Robin, how was your week?
Oh, my week has been wonderful, of course. But I really am really excited about next weekend, about Friday. I think this is going to be awesome. I cannot freaking wait.
Me too. Get to meet some good old boys like us. Maybe sip a little shine and get a weekend away. Finally, I don't know about you, but we ain't never had a weekend away.
Well, it's been a very long time, and as many hours as I've been working, I am ready for this.
You ready to peel off them Pampers and put on the Romper Room music and get it on, huh?
Yeah, and I've been told him at work, I'm not even going to be nowhere near here, so don't bother calling me.
Well, seeing how I've got, this is the first time I've ever had anybody in my studio, which is my dining room / office, it's my honor to welcome my special guest, our special guest, everyone's special guest. My beautiful and sassy daughter, Dakota Shortridge.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, baby girl.
Hey, Robin.
I got Dakota in the house.
You always thought her in the house.
That's true. I live here.
That's the reason why she's in the house. Well, I just in case I screw up anybody's head, now her name is Dakota Lee. Mm-hmm. I call her Lee. And
I call her Lee too.
So if you hear us call her Lee, you'll think we're talking about somebody else.
We're talking about Robert E. Lee the whole time.
We're talking Robert E. Lee. What a great man. But enough of us shooting the shit. Let's get down to business.
In it.
So Lee, could you tell everyone a little bit about yourself before we delve into your world?
Well, I live at my parents' house because I owe the government a lot of money from student loans, as well as, well, I graduated from Concord University not too long ago with an English degree. I've lived in Tazewell my whole life, the good Virginia, but was born in Welch, West Virginia, because my parents are like, that's cheaper. Let's have it there. At least I think that's what it is, since I have one of the parents in the room.
As far as I know.
So we did it. And now I write. I've wrote for a long time. And now I work at Clinch Valley Community Action Family Crisis Services as a community educator for children, the elderly, and just colleges and people in general.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, first off, I want to take some time to talk about your career that you're working. that you're working now.
Mm-hmm.
What set you on this path to become an advocate for survivors of domestic and sexual violence?
Well, like I said, I owe the government a lot of money. Actually, the job position was open, and Mama found it. Mama was actually the one who's like, look at this. Apply for it. I applied for it. I thought I was going to be a sex ed teacher, but I turned out to be a prevention teacher instead. And a lot of people think I'm a sex ed teacher, but I'm not. It's violence prevention. But where I have to say the word sex, a lot of people think that, nah, I'm a sex ed teacher. I'll be at the skating rink in Tasman and be like, oh, that's my sex ed teacher. Nah, I taught you sexual harassment. I didn't teach you about condoms.
I mean, really, whoever thought that one of my youngins would be a sex ed teacher?
I know. Who would have thunk it?
Who would ever thunk it?
Who would have thought one of your kids would know what condoms are?
Oh, yeah. Who would have ever thought that we wouldn't know what condoms were?
Oh, yeah, because apparently I didn't. Nobody taught me that shit.
Lee, I'm proud of you for not spreading your seed, baby.
I mean, I don't have any seed to spread, but...
you got
you know what I mean.
I could sell my eggs if I wanted to.
That's a good shortage of DNA there.
It's good. Good money in it.
Robin?
Well, I'm having technical difficulties.
What do you want me
can
to
you
ask
hear
the
me?
Next? Yeah,
yeah,
we can hear you.
Okay.
You want me to
wait.
Ask?
I think I got like an echo, but y'all can hear me okay?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead and ask the next one while I fix this.
Okay. Okay, what is an advocate? What is the purpose of an advocate? And what kind of skills or training do you need to become an advocate?
Oh, man, that's a really good question, because even though I'm a community educator, I'm also an advocate, and I work with lots and lots of advocates, and where I mostly teach children with good touch, bad touch, sexual harassment, and teen dating violence, they need advocates. So let's say a child discloses someone in their family's hurting them, because there's an 80% chance of that. Usually parents are the ones who are perpetrators, 80% of the time. So an advocate will roll up and be like, okay, do you need a protective order? Do you need help with Title IX? Do you need lawyer services? Do you need someone to be your voice? Basically, advocates are voices. Advocates are a shoulder to cry on. Advocates are believers. Basically, we don't judge. We believe. Absolutely believe, no matter what. Even if the courts say no, we'll still be with you until the end.
That's awesome. Cool. I'm so proud of you. There's so many people that need voices out there.
Oh, definitely. I've had lots and lots of clients. Just in one school, I had a class of 70 girls, 14 of them disclosed to us. And it's here. Yeah, it's in Tasman, Russell County. It's everywhere. And a lot of people don't think it is. I've had trouble getting into some schools. They'll be like, oh, we don't need that here, because I always feel like they're covering up for somebody in their school, because I've also had a couple teachers that's been doing weird stuff to kids, not really touching them, but doing sexually harassing things, like touching their shoulder real creepily or just saying inappropriate things to kids. But that's grooming. That's the grooming phase when they're trying to see how much they can get. There's a lot to look forward to in this job.
So, can anyone become an advocate? Do you have to have a degree to become an advocate?
Well, it depends on where you go to. You just need an associate's degree for this job, but it's better if you do have an actual degree and some counseling, too, because you're going to have a lot of disclosures. You're going to hear a lot of stories, lots of stories. When I first got here, there was a woman who... husband would drug her and film himself having sex with her. And that was one of the first stories I ever heard having this job. So you got to have a thick skin. You got to do a lot of wellness. They promote wellness all over the place with this job. Take care of yourself,
right. Treat
yourself all the time, because you're going to hear nonstop pain and suffering. And you think everything's pain and suffering, but it's not. There's a lot of good out there, but It's hard to see in this job sometimes. So you got to treat yourself. Yeah.
Well, when you're dealing with the victims, is there a certain criteria that you go by? You know, so you know, if you can explain how that works.
Oh, yeah. It depends on if you're dealing with an adult or a kid. Where I deal with mostly children, I have to go through usually the school's rules or the Department of Social Services and CPS's rules. If a kid discloses to me, no matter what, I'm supposed to call CPS, DSS, and tell the guidance counselor. But that depends on the county with that. Tassel County, you can tell the guidance counselor, and they do all that. But in Russell County, they want you to call everybody you can, which I can see that. I really like that way, too. But it just depends. And with adults, you, of course, talk to them if they disclose, see if they want to become a client, and then you can give them transportation. You can help them get food stamps. We can help them get education. We can help them get counseling. And same with the children, too. It's just the parents have to sign off on it for
right.
to work with us. But adults don't have to sign off.
What kind of barriers do you run into and have you seen for victims and trying to get assistance they need?
Well, where I deal with children, I mostly deal with ignorant parents. I hate to say it like that, but there is a little boy, I won't say the county, but he was sodomized by an adult. And where he had one little thing wrong in his testimony, it didn't go up with the first thing he told the cops, just one little thing, courts don't take it. They don't want to take cases like this. They don't want to deal with child rape. They don't want to deal with anything like that because it's hard. It's heavy stuff. So they'll find whatever loophole they can to just throw it out so they won't have to deal with it. And the parents, too, the parents will be like, oh, well, since he's a boy, he'll get over it. He'll move on. Everything will be okay. And this is recently. This just happened this week. And usually kids who have been abused become abusers. Violence is taught. And if
that
we catch them...
heartbreaking that the boy is getting no help.
Absolutely no help. His parents said he'll be fine. Which he woke... He was drugged and then sodomized and woke up to it. So that's unhealthy. And he's not going to get over that. I hope he does, maybe. But most likely not.
Oh my God, so, that's horrible.
So does the Clinch Valley track the numbers of the victims served?
Oh yeah, we have to. We are a grant company. We are a nonprofit, so we have to mark everything. But what we're starting to do now, I have surveys for the children. We've never really tabulated the surveys from the children, and from the schools I teach. We have questions on there. Have you ever been assaulted or in domestic violence? If so, put down the person's name if it wasn't you, or put down who it was. And we're going to start tabulating boys and girls and from counties, who's been hurt, who hasn't been hurt, what demographic's been hurt the most, which ones experienced more domestic violence, which ones experienced more sexual violence, which I could probably tell you those numbers right now without tabulating them all the way yet. Which Tassel leans more towards sexual assault, and Russell County is more domestic violence, just off of numbers. They haven't been tabulated yet, but just from what I've seen, what trends I've seen, teach it in schools.
Well, with your experience working with your clients who have been victimized, what has gone well and what has not gone so well, and how can, you know, any barriers be removed?
Well, basically my job is education, and the barriers in the way are people that aren't educated. I have a principal who refuses to let me go teach her boys because I have 14 girls disclosed. And she doesn't want the public knowing that her school has a really bad sexual harassment problem. The boys in that school are nasty. They're disrespectful, and they're working on it. I'm using finger quotes. You can't see my finger quotes on the radio, but there's a lot of people who just don't want me there. They just don't want this program there, and by Title IX, I'm supposed to be there. You're supposed to have someone teach about sexual harassment, teen dating violence in your schools, and gender-based inequality.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't there any legal way you can get in there?
That's how I get in. And also, I'm in the SOL. Coach Valley Community Action has been working with schools for years and years. We have our own thing in the SOLs that throw our program out just step by step. I use a lot of different things than I use in the SOLs, but I tell principals, come watch my presentation. Come see these kids. Come with me when I'm talking to these kids, and you'll see it. And we get a lot of backlash from the community with the women's shelter that I work with. People think it's a brothel. People think that all it is a drug den, which you're going to have addiction in there. Addiction and abuse just go hand in hand. So you're going to have it. And just to demonize these women, I've had an eighth grader, when I was teaching at a middle school. One of the questions I always put up for questions she asked, and I know her parents told her, how many prostitutes do you have in your shelter?
Wow.
I get these questions all the time, and I have to tell them. They're like, I see him standing outside the shelter smoking a cigarette. And I'm like, if you were drugged and filmed, your husband filmed himself raping you, wouldn't you want to go outside and have a cigarette? Wouldn't you want to be in a place where you could be safe? But instead, you're being called a prostitute and being slut-shamed when you did nothing wrong.
Well, it's just because society looks down upon everybody that struggles and has a hard time.
Oh, absolutely, especially women. And in the South, you're supposed to stand by your man. I know a lot of abusers use the Bible a lot to get what they want from them. And drugs, too. They get these girls addicted to drugs. Then we have a lot of girls on Suboxone and methadone, which is demonized in Appalachia, even though lawyers and stuff go to get their methadone and stuff at 4 a.m. here. So
yeah.
It's everywhere.
So in what areas could your program use more support in working with persons who are victims of domestic and sexual violence?
We have so much support in a lot of organizations, but community members are the ones we get it from the most. The ones who are like, you guys got a brothel up there and slut shaming us. I remember when I was teaching at one of the schools, I had a girl ask me, is showing your bra strap, could that get me raped? And I'm like, absolutely not. And then one of the teachers afterwards, like, how could you tell these kids that they could show their bra straps? I know you're doing your job, but my job is to protect these kids. And I was like, my job is to protect these kids so they don't think showing a boob is means for them to get raped. You're never, ever asking
exactly.
for it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Bra show all the time. Dudes show some nips, and that doesn't say that they're wanting it or asking for it. So it's just a lot of education.
I show my nips all the time.
It's just nothing
nobody,
but
nobody rapes me.
Pops is asking for it. He wants it.
Does your agency record demographic data on victims of domestic and sexual violence? And if so, can you explain to everyone how that works?
Oh, absolutely. We got paperwork out the wazoo. Like I said, we work for grant money. We work for the government, but we work off the government scraps. Whatever they can give us, we take it. And they want to know. They want to know all the white people we're working with because we're rural Appalachia. That's about all we have. But and how many LGBTQ youth and people we see. I've had a few. I've had a gender fluid person, but they weren't a client. They just opened up. It's like, I'm gender fluid, and your paper didn't have this on here. And I'm like, I'm sorry. We got wax paperwork. I'm sorry. But just a lot of paperwork. It depends on the grants, really, of what we're supposed to do.
Well, can you think of ways that victim service agencies could better work with service providers and law enforcement agencies to conduct services for crime victims who have been victimized by domestic and sexual violence?
Well, our company does a really, really good job. We have really, really good connections. I've met so many cops. I've met doctors. I've met in trainings, just tons of training all the time with whomever we can get, whoever we need to learn more about the resources in the community. If you're someone in Tassel that needs help, I've got like 30 people I can give you to off the bat. And we do have a 24-hour hotline now. So we have resources out the wazoo. The community works with us really well. It's just the individual level that we got to reach to. For some reason, we bypassed the individual level and went up to the community level with education. But that's why I got this job, so I can tell people, hey, it's not a brothel.
Well, so what are some of the ways to ensure that community collaboration would be more successful?
Well, I've actually talked to the company a little bit about that in a survey we had to take. I'm like, not enough people know what Clinch Valley Community Action does, because it's not just a place for survivors of domestic and sexual violence. We have Head Start. We used to have GED classes, but I'm pretty sure we can get you in contact with people who do. We have community corrections, where if you maybe had a minor charge against you and you need to do some volunteer hours to pay for your court charges, we can do that. We've got HUD, Section 8. We've got the workforce in there, all sorts of things that Clinch Valley Community Action does, as well as senior companions. I haven't been to a triad meeting in forever. I know they're still having them. Please email me. But we work with seniors a lot too, especially where elder abuse is very underreported, almost as much as child abuse. Very, very underreported.
Wow. So what are some of the community task forces and coalitions that exist that help address some of the issues of, you know, the victimizations of persons of domestic violence and sexual violence? Who do you need to be involved?
Well, we need everyone to be involved, because if one person is being hurt, everyone's being hurt. You got to be good bystanders and stand up to people. You got to be like, hey, that's not right. If you see someone yelling at their wife in the Walmart, you need to stand up. If you see a woman yelling at her kids in the Walmart, hitting her kids or something in the Walmart, you need to stand up. And I know I use the Walmart because the Walmart is just a melting pot of crazy. And one of the places to stand up to people, especially in a little place like Tassel in the South. But there's people you can go to. There's not as many people that can help you. But the resources are limited. I mean, there's Clinch Valley Community Action in Tassel, People Incorporated in Russell County that helps with domestic violence. And just the courts in general get your help. We don't have many men's shelters in Tassel County. We send them to the Fincastle and wish them the best of luck, because if not, they're going to Norton or they're going all the way to Beckley in West Virginia. And we can't even buy them a bus ticket to get to either one of those places.
Damn.
Yeah.
Wow.
So what kind of information assistance could you provide to service providers about working with people who have experienced domestic violence, sexual assault, or other crimes?
Basically, email us. Email my boss, Jennifer Bourne. And we did this thing called Project Link, where we went for women who are pregnant and drug abusers. And they got the whole community of Tassel and Russell County, all their people together, even methadone clinics and Suboxone clinics were there to talk about it. And we need to do more of that, get the cops with us with trainings like that, where we could just stand there, tell them what we need, tell them what we have, and tell them how to better it and better services. Because cops here are uneducated. Not all of them are, but some of them are. I had a client that was 91 years old, and one of the first things the cop said is, she's too ugly to be raped.
Dang.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so people are very uneducated, and it's my job, but it's really hard to educate an entire town one by one.
Well, the public to know about domestic violence and sexual assault that we haven't talked about?
Well, absolutely, it happens. it happens. 1 in 3 girls by the age of 18 will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime, and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually assaulted by the age of 18. I believe the boys' numbers are much higher. Boys don't report, and I talk about it to guys all the time, but I can count on my fingers how many guys I've actually talked to that have become clients. I have tons of girls, barely any boys. And boys are the ones that become abusers. Even though 15% of men are abusers, 85% aren't. There's a lot of good guys out there. But that 15% gives men a really bad rap.
Yeah.
Really bad rap.
All right.
Well, going to change speed up a little bit here. We're going to talk about your book here.
Yeah.
Your first published book just came out a couple months ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's titled On Pain Through Love.
Mm-hmm.
What started you on this road to writing poems and short stories?
Well, I've been writing for a long time. I know you don't like the subject of Nana, but Nana got me a diary when I was really little. You remember that fuzzy orange diary?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I would just write about my day in there. And I watched the show As Told by Ginger. And she would write in her diary. And I was like, yeah, I'm just like her with better hair. And I would just write. And then when I got into school, learned about poetry and just started writing poems, my feelings. Like if feelings got too overwhelming, I was like, let's just put it down on paper. And apparently hippies loved it at first because I used to perform them in hippie dens. People smoking weed in the back, and I'm just like, let me tell you my life. Snaps. I had this one weird lady at a hippie den who's like, I don't want you to snap at my writing. I want you to make your favorite animal noise. There was a lot of dolphins in the crowd that night. But I just getting feelings out. Just letting it out in a healthy way, in a very healthy way.
Cool. Well, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't know what is going on, guys. I'm so sorry.
No, that's okay.
What, can you not hear us?
It's like, hang on. It's like a echo.
That'd be all right. We'll work through it.
I think I fixed it. Can you hear me now? Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about your book and the inspiration of your poems?
Well, the reason why I think Daddy started this out with my job is because I was assaulted in college. I became one of the statistics. I was assaulted during the Red Zone, which the Red Zone is your first year of university or college, if you have to go away for college, your first month of dorm living to, I think, Thanksgiving break is the Red Zone, where you're most likely to get assaulted. I was assaulted in October. I started in August, so you can only imagine. And when that happened, I didn't know what to do with those feelings. Didn't know what to do. I didn't even tell Mommy and Daddy until months after all of it happened. And the best way instead of keeping it all inside, I just wrote about it and put it on paper to get it out, since I was keeping it in for so long.
Oh, my good girl.
I will find you.
You know he's not listening.
Yeah, it's coming one of these days, bud, if you're listening to this.
Yeah.
So, what is your writing process like? Do you just sit and just go with it, or?
It depends. Where I had my English degree, I was forced to write a lot, so I can do the forced writing. I do the romantics, even though a lot of people are like, no one just gets inspiration out of their butt, writes it, and it's perfect. I've actually done that and making money off of some of those poems. Well, they're not perfect. Nothing's perfect. But it happens. Sometimes you just write something down, and you're like, wow, that's awesome. Like the guy who wrote Life's a Beach, I bet he just came up with that out of nowhere, making millions off of it. So it happens. I'm not making millions, but I'm making enough for the honeys.
For the honey. The hell does that mean?
For the bass.
So does writing exhaust you?
Does writing exhaust me? It depends what I'm writing about. I had to take a writing class where I had to write different types of memos because I took a professional writing is my major, one of my majors, and writing memos for 2 hours was the worst day of my life.
I would say so. So do you try to be original, or do you try to deliver, you know, to readers what they want?
Where this book was just what I wanted to do, what I wanted to get out. And sometimes I do have to remind them, like, oh, yeah, the reader's going to love this line, especially when I write about Jim Jones. I'm like, everybody loves Jim Jones. I have to write about him. So sometimes I have the reader in mind, but mostly this particular work was just getting it out.
Mm-hmm.
This is for me, saying I can do this. I can get published. I can make money. People think I'm cool. Buy my book.
I even had to buy the damn book.
Yeah, well, we only got one free book.
But that's some shit.
I kept that book.
I'm her daddy and has still have to pay for it. So people, don't be stingy. I had to buy it.
It's only 8 bucks, Amazon. It's going to be on Books A Million online in a few months, I think.
I'm so proud of you.
Aw. Oh, you're awesome, baby girl.
Oh, thank you, guys.
Well, do you think someone could be a writer if they don't feel emotions strongly enough?
Yeah, if you are... Was it nihilist? I've heard it pronounced nihilist and nihilist. I don't even know. But, yeah, if you hate life and everything with it, you can write. I mean, have you ever read anything? There's a lot of people who hate themselves who write. Gosh.
Are you asking me about Brad?
Yeah, I know you've read. You've read Mother Night by Kurt Vonnegut, and he hates everything, and he wrote.
I'm a reader. People may not believe it, but I do read.
He only reads when he's pooping.
Hey, don't be telling people that.
I think it's obviously
to know. Believe it or not, people, Rodney knows a little bit about everything.
I've got most of my education in matter.
That's fair enough.
What'd she say?
What'd you say, Robin?
Yeah, she sounds like she's falling in a hole.
Yeah, you do. You're like, hey.
You sound like you're in the bathroom again. Get out of there.
In the bathroom reading.
Am I out now?
That's better.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm telling you, something's going on with my connections up here tonight, y'all. So, do you want each book to stand on its own, or are you trying to build like a body of work with connections between each book?
I think all writings will be connected no matter what, just because I wrote them and they'll be my experience. And English nerds will probably, if it ever gets to that point, English nerds take my life and be like, everything's drawn together. She was a part of the Illuminati. Here's all the triangles in her book. But I just write to write to get it out, and sometimes for my own entertainment, because I'm writing a novel right now, and it's disgusting, and I love it. So it's just for me, and it's my... publisher wants to publish it. I hope you guys like it too. Mostly it's for me. I know it sounds selfish. I write for the people. Nah, I write for me.
There you go.
And make money on the side, just a little bit, but not a lot.
So has the publishing, after publishing your first book, has it changed your process of writing?
No, I'm still lazy. I think I've gotten lazier since I've been published, but it took me a few years to write this book. It took a while to get all the poems in order because I write kind of like Taylor Swift. Anytime I'm real emotional, boom, it gets on a page. But the difference is I'm not writing about exes going, he dumped me, but I dumped him again. What? No, I don't write about that. I've got bad blood with him. No, I don't do that.
Well, what was an early experience where you learned that language had power?
I learned that. I feel like you wrote that question so I could talk about you. I feel like that's
It ain't about me. It's about you.
Treat his ego, Lee.
Well, I grew up with a man who talked like he was a part of the movie Scarface. I grew up with a family who thought there were other supporting characters in the movie of Scarface. I love my mama to death, but she has dropped some bombs in my life. And I would have to say that was important to me. I learned raw emotion really quickly in my life just because I was raised by very passionate people. Like, my favorite thing to say, this is from the childhood, Brother Zach one day was like, Lee, Dallas, give me a minute. And then he went to his trunk and pulled out a sack full of balls. But then he went at Mama and was like, hey, Mama, look at my ball sack. And she cussed him out for an hour. For an hour. She's like, Mother effing bull ass Zach, how could you? And that's the day I learned how powerful language was. That Zach just manipulating ball sack, insinuating to his stuff, could trigger someone like poor Mama.
I don't know where he got that shit from.
I don't know. With your question to talk about you, and I turned around on Mama and Zach.
I didn't ask it about
my
me.
Brother's nuts.
I just thought it was a really good question.
That's a good question.
Here's a question for both of you. Is Sue listening to this tonight?
Lord knows.
She doesn't own the internet. She don't know
what the hell the internet
is.
She
hasn't worn a bra in 7 years. Oh, man.
Okay. What do you owe the real people upon whom you base your characters?
What do I owe the people? I feel like that's another question that was loaded towards you.
It's not.
Since I wrote about you in the book.
Daddy's
like,
fishing.
I'm
fishing.
I want compliments.
It ain't compliments. I'm just trying to see where this can go because I mean, we talked about where you've written about me, but we haven't really delved in so much as why.
Okay, so re-ask me the question since I made so many jokes.
What do you owe the real people upon whom you base your characters?
I know the person I wrote about thinks they deserve a truck, but I'm not making that kind of money to get you a truck.
Why, Lord, you ain't making that kind of money yet, but whatever you do, I'm watching
your bank account.
I'm watching that bank account. If I see you coming in here driving a Jaguar, I'll be like, yeah, I need a pickup truck now.
Your hands
will
be straight out, like, hey, like the Democratic Party, hands out.
Be like, either that or my lawyer will be in contact with your lawyer.
And our lawyer's the same lawyer, so he's in his room. But I don't owe them anything because I write this, like I said, for me. And at the same time, I love writing. The reason why I say that is because I write about hard things. I wrote about your suicide attempt. I wrote about the thoughts that my siblings.
Where'd you go?
Huh?
Where'd y'all go?
We're here.
Okay, now we can hear you.
Okay.
Yeah, but I've written about some very heavy topics, and some stuff that's not in the book that I've been writing on has been about love. I've been trying to write about my mom, Ma, and Papa, because they were really fun. They had a really fun life. And that's what I like to do. I just like to write life, write reality, even though it doesn't seem like reality when you read them. You read the one when Daddy was a truck driver, people are like, hello. We have a caller calling in at the home phone.
Yeah, my phone's a buzzing. My house phone's a buzzing. Lord,
they're calling in. Mama's like, I am listening to this.
Apparently.
So, how many unpublished and half-finished books do you have, Lee?
What?
How many unpublished and half-finished books do you have?
How many things I have unpublished and published?
No, unpublished and half finished.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a lot of unpublished poems. That just seems because, like I said, I just fart them out in the gym. I'll be listening to Lana Del Rey, working on my glutes, writing a good poem. So there's a lot unpublished. And the novel's about halfway there. I'm thinking about just making it a novella. I like short works. I don't like really, really long works. Even though I'm reading The Help, I love The Help. I like Edgar Allan Poe. I like it short. I like it sweet. Let's go home. So there's a lot, just a bunch, because I've been writing for years and years.
Okay, what kind of research do you do, and how long do you spend researching before beginning writing?
I just write it, and then I research it when I'm like, that doesn't fit the time period. Because the novel I'm writing is like in the 50s, and I put the word internet in there, and I was like, nope. Then go on good old Google and be like, was this in the 50s? Was this in the 50s? I guess it's in the 50s. So.
Well, just ask Mom, and she'll tell you.
Oh, Mom will be like, I'll tell you everything, you know. It'll be great. 10 cigarettes later.
Yeah. Okay. How many hours a day do you write?
Sometimes it's a lot. Sometimes it's not a lot. It depends. Like I said, I've been a very lazy writer lately, but I do keep journals. I keep a work journal, and I keep a diary, and I don't get to write in them every day, but I try to because I like to keep my work separate from my life. So the way I do it is journaling about it at work and then journaling about other things in my diary. It may seem a little bit too much, but I didn't like mixing the hardships of work in with the hardships of social life, if that makes any sense.
So what period of your life do you find you write about the most? Your childhood, teenage years, or your young adult life?
I think it's young adult life, because childhood was great. But at the same time, childhood was mostly Dallas and I farting around with Barbies. That will be my next poem. Dallas and I farting around with Barbies.
There you go. Bestseller.
But yeah, there's no particular time period. I just write about other people's stuff usually. If it's not, poems are usually my stuff, but the short stories are other people's stories. I love twisting other people's stories to make them super entertaining and fun. Or super educational and sad. But that's what I do.
Wow. So would you use writing kind of like a spiritual practice?
Definitely, definitely. It's a way to just get it out and leave it on the page. And sometimes that doesn't work. And you got to go into therapy. But that's all right, too. There's no shame in going to therapy. But it's just easier that way. It's just easy.
Even I've been in therapy.
Yeah, everyone needs to go at least a couple times.
Mine was mandated by the state.
Whose hasn't been mandated by the state?
So, here you go. Would you have you ever hid or do you ever hide any secrets in your books that only a few people would find and be able to point out?
That's a really good question. I think. Maybe. I feel like some people were reading this would be like, I'm mad, triggered, absolutely triggered. But I say there's some hidden secrets in there. I am a part of the Illuminati.
I knew it. It's a family thing.
I mean, I gave my soul to the devil just to publish this book.
Well, buddy, you got screwed over then.
Yes.
Because you ain't making the bank. I thought you would.
Yeah, but I like put little nuggets and stuff in there. Like, if they read this, they'll know it's them and I'm mad. Yeah, stuff like that. That's in there. I guess that's the Swiftie and I am.
So what was your hardest poem or chapter or story you ever wrote?
The hardest poem I ever wrote was the first poem I ever got published, which was about Malia, my niece Malia. I don't know if the listeners know much about her, but we love her to death. We love her to death. And it was when custody battles were going really, really rough with Malia. And I was sitting at the community college one day, and they had a poetry contest to get your book published. Well, not book published, but your poem published. And I just sat down and wrote about the struggle I was going to have with Malia and what I needed to do as an aunt to keep her away from all the bad and keep her on the good path. So that was the hardest one. Like right now, I was like, what? But
no,
it's been
you
a lot.
Are an amazing aunt.
Huh?
You are an amazing aunt. She loves you so much. Oh.
Thank you. I love Malia too. She's my baby. We fart around and play Barbies just like that.
She's my little shadow.
She is. She's so cute.
So, if you had to do something differently as a child or a teenager to become a better writer as an adult, what would you do?
I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't change a thing because I think that the struggle, realness to my writing, the struggle of poverty, the struggle of watching you work really, really hard, the struggle of watching mama work really, really hard, the struggle of the divorce, the struggle of just everything in general is what makes this writing so real. It's so real. I don't like writing fake stuff. I like writing real stuff. And nothing's more real than poverty.
Rod, leave. Hello. Well, guys, looks like we might be having a little bit of technical difficulties. Give me just 1 second here. Not quite sure what's going on. I'm about to find out. Okay, guys, not quite sure what's going on. Hopefully, whatever it is, it'll come back soon. Can you hear me, guys? Can y'all hear me now? Alternative facts.
The following message is transmitted at the request of the United States government. At 12:07 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, numerous unidentified objects of unknown intent and unknown origin were detected at high altitudes over multiple locations of Earth's outer space by the National Radio Astronomy Observatory, and these objects are presumed to be some form of controlled aircraft. It is not known if more of these aircraft will arrive or if they will attempt entering Earth's atmosphere. United States citizens are encouraged to monitor local media outlets, as more updates will follow as information becomes available.
The following message is transmitted at the request of the United States government. Attacks by the undead have been reported in several states across the country. The dead are rising from their graves and are attacking the human race. At this time, it is expected that more attacks of this nature will occur in several other states in the next few hours. The intent behind the attack is unknown at this time. He has been observed that a bike for exchange of fluids is a method of transmission. This is an extremely dangerous situation if they crave the taste of human flesh. It is not known whether this event will last for hours, days, or even longer. Stay calm, as authorities have been dispatched to deal with these creatures. An all-clear siren will be sounded when this situation is under control.
Pacific Standard Time, NORAD detected a long-range nuclear missile launcher. This missile is believed to be headed in the direction of all residents within a 400-mile radius of this area should seek a fallout shelter immediately.
Welcome to Within the Chaos with your host,
Rodney Shortridge,
and co-host,
Robin Dalton.
Well, good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us tonight. You can listen in by going to blogtalkradio.com or /within the chaos.
You may hang up or press 1 for more options. Phone.
You can dial 323-870-4197, and you can also call in to ask questions to our guests at the same number, 323-870-4197. From deep within the heart of the Appalachians, I'd like to welcome everyone and thank you all for listening to Within the Chaos. My name is Rodney Shortridge, and I'll be your host tonight, along with my fiery redhead co-host, Robin Dalton.
There is more to me, Queen Eliara of Elfgard, than my elven magic. Just as there's more to Geico than saving you money, Geico also gives you 24/7 access to licensed agents online, on the phone, or on the Geico app. And while I am a mighty elf queen, I am also a mighty big fan of barbecue potato chips. Minions! More smoky mesquite!
Geico. Expect great savings and a whole lot more. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.